All right, I'm going to go ahead and start this Ridley Planning Commission meeting dated Thursday, August 17th, 2017. So why don't we just stand up and do a Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Face the flag, ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. And we're going to go ahead and do a roll call for attendance, please.
Commissioner Barcelos.
Here.
Commissioner Bissett.
Here.
Commissioner Hudson. Chairman Commissioner Hudson is excused.
Okay.
Commissioner Perez.
Yes.
Chairman Custodio.
Present. Now, this is the public comment portion. This provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the Commission's jurisdiction and which are not already on this agenda. And please note that there's no one coming up and asking for public opinion for comment for items that are not on the agenda. So we're going to go ahead and move on. And commissioners, this is agenda number one. This is to approve our consent agenda for meeting minutes for July 24th, and which was a special meeting, and our regular meeting from August 8th of this year, 2017. Did you guys have a chance to review them? Is there any questions, concerns that we wanted to address now? Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and ask for a motion to approve. May I get a second?
I'll make a motion.
All right, can we get a roll call, please?
Chairman Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Bissett?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
All right, so those minutes are approved. And now we're going to go ahead into item agenda number two, the public hearing. And I'm going to go ahead and give it over to staff. And you have the floor, Ellen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the Planning Commission. Ellen Moore, Associate Planner with the Community Development Department. The item before you tonight is conditional use permit application number 2017-5, which is a proposed 20-unit apartment complex. On East, or it's actually bordered by three streets in Ridley: East Dinuba Avenue, South Hemlock Avenue, and East Lincoln Avenue. The property in question is the vacant one right there. You do see a house and then a structure with a white roof. It's a metal structure on that property, but it is surrounded by apartment units that have also been approved by planned unit developments. And then to the north, those are single family homes. It's a little bit less than an acre parcel right now. The general plan land use is high density residential, and the zone district is high density residential. Technically, it is RM2. And there are no current street sidewalk improvements. As you can see, this is the view I'm standing on East Lincoln Avenue, looking towards the project. So we would be looking at the northern portion of the project site here, just showing there's no improvements. And then this is from Dinuba Avenue. I'm standing on the corner of Dinuba and Hemlock. So we do have the bike lane, but we don't have sidewalk curb gutter there. And then you can see the existing house that is on the right side. So as mentioned, this is an interesting site because it is bordered by three streets. And so there are three street side yards, which means that the setback is a little bit farther in. The code proposes 15 feet along Dinuba, along Hemlock, and along Lincoln. Oh, that's pretty small on the screen, I apologize. In the packet, Exhibit A is this overall site plan of the project. So it does show the 20 units arranged in a U-shape fashion. And it shows that the entrance to the parking lot is on South Hemlock, which is good that it is not on Dinuba Avenue, which is a pretty busy street. The apartment units are two bedroom, one bath per each unit. And there are proposed street and sidewalk improvements with this project, so they will construct those on all sides as part of the project. And this project is proposed as a planned unit development because, as mentioned, the project does have three street side yards, so there's a little bit less room to work with compared to a typical interior property. So the The project is consistent with the municipal code, with everything else, lot coverage, parking requirements, parking coverage requirements. So where they are deviating is from certain setbacks. And those deviations are essentially little pop-outs. They are about, I think they're about 50 by 100, if I remember correctly. And so that's just kind of adding an architectural feature, but that does mean it encroaches into the side yard setback by 5 feet, but that is not through the whole wall. It kind of curves around. So these are the elevations of...
Say that again, Alan. Oh. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What curves around?
Well, they don't curve around. I'm sorry. It's kind of the angled. There's these 50 by 100 pop-outs that... So you have the general, the two-story wall that is set back 10 feet. And then on the first story, there are portions of each unit that come out 5 feet. So they're kind of angling out as such, so it creates somewhat of a zigzag.
You're talking about.
Correct, into right. the into yeah, the can, side yard
you
setback.
Can see that in the elevation that's up on the screen right now. In the middle, you can see the small portions that pop out there just on the first floor.
And then so the top elevation is what you would see from Dinuba Avenue if you were looking at the project. Along Hemlock. So that's kind of where the main entrance. So then in between the stairs, that would be where the parking is and where the carports will be for the parking. If you are looking from the property, the shared property line, the only shared property line, that's what you see for the middle elevation. And that also does show those pop-outs where you see the first floor roof that's angled down. That's where the pop-outs are in this elevation. And then facing Dinuba and facing Lincoln, or if you're on Lincoln looking at the project, if you're on Dinuba looking at the project, those will be the elevations that you see as well. Let's see. So as mentioned, the project is proposed as a planned unit development, and according to the Reedley Municipal Code, plan unit developments involve projects with careful application of design in order to achieve a more functional, aesthetically pleasing, and harmonious living and working environment within the city, which otherwise might not be possible by strict adherence to the regulations of this title. So staff believes that the design of this project offsets the, it is beneficial to have the project approved as such because the design is well done and because they can't meet the setbacks, Planning Commission is allowed to approve it with those encroachments into the setback. A couple things to note here. Each unit will be equipped with fire sprinklers. That is a requirement for all new residential development because in some cases setbacks are a certain distance because of fire separation. So if there's setbacks, if buildings are separated far enough from each other, it's less likely for the fire to catch and go from one structure to the next. So that's kind of how it's been in the past if there weren't things like fire sprinklers or increased fire-rated walls. So now that those things can be implemented, then setbacks can get a little bit smaller. But 5 feet is usually the maximum amount because if you go less than 5 feet, you do have to increase the fire rating. So there's certain things that you can do, but it's, as usual, it's more expensive to have a increased fire rated wall. So usually people just stay at five feet. So you've probably seen some developments that have zero lot lines. That's the case. They do have a fire rated wall between the two to help with to address the fire safety. Let's see. The other thing that is being deviated from the current code is the open space requirement. There is a 10% open space requirement for multifamily developments. It usually comes in the form of a playground structure or play area. So in this case, staff is recommending that the project go forward. It does not have play structures itself, but it does provide an opportunity for there to be backyards on the first floor, and the proximity for this property to the Reedley Sports Park, which is less than a mile away, that can help with that deviation there. So this public hearing was duly noticed in the exponent. There were letters that were sent to the surrounding property owners for the project, and staff has determined that the project is exempt from CEQA, as mentioned in the staff report. So that concludes staff's report. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. We do also have the applicant here. Efren Yanez from Yanez Construction is here. The site plan drafter is David Lathrop. He is also here tonight to answer any other questions that you have for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Commission, do you guys have any questions?
I have some concerns. I probably could live with the setbacks, but when we start taking out 10% of the property away from the playgrounds and stuff like that, that Dinuba Avenue to travel down to the sports complex is a good mile and a half. I can't see the kids, and nowadays kids aren't driven to the sports complex. They walk or they ride their bicycles, and I have a real issue with that, because I think we need to provide a place for those kids to play. And I think we just got a little too aggressive with trying to make this work because of ROI issues probably, and cost ratios and to income. And I think we're trying to squeeze too much into to that spot, and we're giving up too much. We're giving them too much leniency on this project, because there's other alternatives you could do with this. And I really have an issue with the way they, and the design is great. Design is great. I just have a tough time, especially when you have all those apartment complexes around on two sides of you, and then the individual residential right in back of them on Lincoln Avenue. I have a tough time being convinced that this is the best structure. And one of the things that we're asked to do is what's best for Reedley and its community. I think that in a couple of years, this is not going to be, I think, what are you calling it, the Valle? El Valle? Mm-hmm. Pretty soon it's going to be El Barrio. And that's not what we're looking for Reedley, in my opinion.
Was there any consideration with structures being added to this? Is that something that could be added later on or considered?
For a playground structure,
right,
of some kind?
Of something of that kind for later on, or to make it a condition?
Once you get the footprint down and laid out, there's no way to do that. There is no way to do that. And you can't give up the parking spaces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's true.
Because you have requirements there. I just, like I said, I'll repeat myself. I think we just got a little too aggressive trying to make this plan work because of ROI.
Now, Ellen, are you familiar with any of the other apartment complexes around there? Is there any structures in their apartments, if you recall?
I don't recall seeing any in the other apartments surrounding it.
Because there is apartments directly west of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's apartments east.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. There's a commercial, I guess, across the street. And
industrial,
then there's
yeah.
single-family homes on to the north.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to remember if I did see any structures there for the any other ones, but I'm just curious if you guys remember or know for sure.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I don't believe the surrounding apartments have that, and they went through the PUD process as well when they came forward, and that may have been something that was exempted at that time.
And I'm going to assume Mr. Yannis, when he comes up, maybe he can he can confirm this, but you know, you're looking probably at lower income families in here. Is based on square footage and location.
It's my understanding and they'll be market rate. I don't know if you would like to. They'll be market rate.
Mr. Yannis, why don't you come over here and address us, please? That'd be great. Go ahead and say your first and last name, and if you don't mind saying your address, please, or where you live, what city you live in, at least.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Efren Yannis. I live here in Reilly. 42931 Road 52. I've been here for the last 25 years, and I'm proud to be here too. These apartments is going to be 20 units, and we have two bedrooms, two baths. I mean, they're close to over 1,000 square feet. I mean, they're going to be very well built, all metal frames on the outside, timely frames on the inside. Nice flooring, nice finish on the outside, all acrylic. I mean, I'm gonna be the top notch in those apartments. So they're probably gonna be one of the best apartments here in Reilly. So not necessarily it's gonna be a low income. I mean, it'll be starting at $950 to $1,100 rent per month. And I can guarantee you, it's gonna be probably one of the best apartments here in Reilly. Any other questions?
We have Mr. Yannis here. No. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yannis.
Thank you.
And commissioners, just for an update, taking a look on Google Earth, all the adjacent multifamily homes do not appear to have any recreational facilities on site.
I think there was a map.
There is in the apartment complexes, they don't have them. The Jefferson School is around the corner. It is one block away. They do have facilities that could potentially be open, for those residents. And the sports park is considered a regional park. I do understand the concern that it may be a farther distance away if someone has to walk. Dinuba Avenue does have bike lanes, and so that bike lane would be continued as a result of this project. And regional parks, in some cases, they are able to replace open space requirements for apartment complexes because it's a regional park. So in some cases, if a single family home or a single family neighborhood, if they don't provide play structures or if that homeowner doesn't want one or doesn't have one on their property, they can go to a park and facilitate that. And then the closest actual park, I believe, would be Mueller Park, which is northwest of that, which would also provide recreational opportunities there. So I do understand your concern, Commissioner Perez.
Yeah, I agree with Pete. I think the aspect of the sports park is it's not that far, it's not that close, and then to go through a roundabout and do all that stuff. So I remember where this is at. So I do recall that Jefferson is not that far away. So that could be a good thing for the residents here. So.
And the only problem with that is after all the activities at schools, they used to leave a gate open. They don't anymore. They lock that thing up where you can't get in anymore. And at one time, I think it was a state law that you leave one gate open. But with everything that's going on now, I don't blame them. I lock it up. I lock it up too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I do want to applaud one thing, and from the city's viewpoint, is that it is taking this project would take the fact that it would be an infill is to be commended, because if this was laid out a little bit different and we had those setbacks and we had the 10%, I wouldn't have no issues with it. I just think that we're creating a little haven over there with all those apartments and so on. The apartments across on Hemlock are very well managed, and I don't think we've ever had any problems with any of the tenants in that area, and so I commend them. Of course, on the other side, it's a little bit different, and because we have a different type of clientele in those apartments to the west of this project. And I think we got a little too aggressive on this project.
I'd like to offer another perspective on the flip side of that, where I do believe kids' activities and space is important. On the flip side is those play structures after hours tend to attract the wrong people. Riffraff will hang out there. The kids will be in there. They will be damaged to the structures that will have to be replaced, drinking, drugs, that kind of thing. So where I do agree with Commissioner Perez in the terms that the space is important, I think in this setting and for the location and the property that we have available to us, that a structure of a play nature may not be the best at this point.
Okay. One thing that I would like to add just as another comment, a couple of the new apartment complexes that we have built in other areas of town do not have play structures. There have been variations of that in other areas. And one thing I do know for sure is that there is a high demand for apartments in Reedley in general. At least with affordable housing, there's hundreds of people on those wait lists. So I do just want to stress the fact that apartments are needed in Reedley, market rate apartments are needed in Reedley. So that is why staff supports the project. That's it.
Thank you, Ellen.
But thank you.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to make comments on this besides Mr. Yanez that already came up? No? Okay. So just for the record, we're going to go ahead and close the public comment portion. Thank you, Ellen. We're going to go ahead and I'm going to do a motion to vote on this resolution that we have in front of you. So I'm going to go ahead and read this, and let's move on. So, commissioners, in front of you, you guys have resolution number 2017-6. It's a resolution of the City of Reedley Planning Commission approving, denying a conditional use permit application number 2017-5 and the related environmental assessment, which is exempt, numbers 2017-6. Both are on the agenda as under number two as A and B. We're going to vote on them together. So I'm going to go ahead and ask for a motion to approve. May I get a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a second. So, Ellen, could we do a roll call, please?
Chairman Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcellas?
Yes.
Commissioner Bissett?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
No.
Okay, thank you so much. This concludes that portion of this meeting on agenda number two. You guys are more than welcome to stay. Mr. Yanez, thank you. We're going to go ahead and go forward with our agenda with the workshop, you guys could stay for that. But if not,
it's more fun than you can imagine.
Right. We're going to talk about carports. So thank you for coming in. Appreciate it. Good luck with that. So this comes to the portion of agenda number three. So it's a workshop. So this is carports and setbacks in the R1 one family residential zone district. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go ahead and give it back to Ellen.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you, Chairman. Ellen Moore again. So tonight we're going to be talking about carports and setbacks in the R1 one family residential zone district. Yeah. So this was something that came about or that we had noticed after we passed an ordinance that provided more standards and an update to our graffiti abatement municipal code, our property maintenance standards, and public nuisances. So what we're going to focus on specifically is some property maintenance standards, things that we've observed around town, and specifically talking about tarps and carports, whether they are manufactured or not manufactured. So to start, wanted to go to the Reedley Municipal Code section that we did update or add, I should say. So tarps for roof and building repair shall be prohibited except for emergency repairs. And additionally, the use of tarps for temporary canopies, enclosures, and or awnings is prohibited in any front yard area visible from any public right of way. So in enforcing this, staff has been great in providing pictures for the workshop just to see what has been happening around town. So this is an example of a tarp carport, and it's not exactly I guess technically it is a structure, but it's put together. It's not a manufactured carport because you can purchase the metal carports and then they come with engineering calcs and all that good stuff. So this is not one of those. So this is in the side yard setback as well. So this is something that is prohibited under that code that I just mentioned, but it is also prohibited within our zoning ordinance. It's a zoning violation because it is in the side yard setback. So when code enforcement has gone around, they have notified people that these are not allowed and that they will be taken down. So something that came about with that is that people decided to say, well, if I can't have tarps, then I can have a metal carport and place that instead so that they can still provide shade there. So we have had instances where this has occurred. So technically, you can get engineering calcs. You can pull building permits for carports of this nature, but you cannot put structures within our setbacks. So this is currently in the side yard and the front yard setback. Typically for a single family residential house or single family zone district, it's a 5-foot setback, 20-foot front yard setback.
And aesthetically, no matter if you were in the setback regulations that we have, it still is aesthetically, it doesn't fit the construction of the aesthetics of the house. How can I say it?
It's just ugly people.
It is. And we should, that shouldn't be permitted. I don't care how many.
No. Isn't that why you asked me to be on this? Because I'm just.
No, that is considered a carport, right? When you go to the store, wow. That is a carport.
That is a carport.
Now, if it was cut in half, would that be okay? Like if it was cut in half and.
If you cut it in half and right. It is out of the setbacks right. And you get a building permit, is okay.
So, Ellen, yeah. In other words, for the people that have motorhomes and it's on the other side of their house, it's actually within their backyard, but it's like maybe a third of that, not even half, a third. I've mm-hmm. seen it, mm-hmm. and it's back there. I mean, it's not nearly as offensive. It's back there keeping the weather off their thing they spent so much money on. I get it. But it's back there. Is that something people can do because it avoids the setback?
There also are rear yard setbacks. So if it's right up against the fence, yeah, it still, technically would not be allowed. Yeah.
The other thing too, in my opinion, is they start putting stuff in there, and then it becomes a site mm-hmm. for sore eyes.
Correct.
And that's what happens. They start putting boats in there. They start putting canoes in there, and. They leave toys there. I mean, it's just a blight area. So,
yes,
I'm against this. I don't completely.
Mm-hmm.
If it was an addition to your home, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just right. like you showed in one of
some
the,
of the pictures that we have.
Yeah, I think I have.
One of them was more a structure.
Right. Yeah,
something
see, that's
like that.
Not so bad. And I'm not sure that's looking at the property line. It looks like that one's out of, is not adhering to the regulations either, the setback regulations. I could be wrong. Why did we issue a permit for that?
Well, I think that this was most likely permitted because it looks like it was part of the house, and so this may have been more of a professional job that somebody did that they would have a contractor come
well,
in and
it
pull
does look better, and it is, but once again here, look at the garage, how it looks from the side. Look at all that stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's terrible, and looking at the line, the setbacks aren't adhered to, I don't believe.
I think it might be the angle, but, and yeah, just, I to be honest, I didn't go out and measure it. The side yard only has to be 5 feet, so it may have it, but it is possible it's a little short. But it does, because I think that may be about 10 feet between that the post and the other house,
right.
So then they'd have 5 feet on both sides.
There was another one, but you're moving on, so right, you're going through these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's see. Yeah, I just did provide some pictures of what we've seen down in the, I don't know why I keep saying that, but what we've seen around town. And so this is an instance where it is out of the setback.
Okay.
And it's attached to the prop or the house, which was potentially permitted or went under a building permit, because you do have to make sure that it is attached to it. It can't just be by two screws, you know. You have to provide plans for that. Now you're going to do that. So the tricky part with this is that this right now, if it got a building permit, it would be approved, because a building permit is ministerial, so you can't condition it to say that it's compatible with the house.
You can't do that.
You cannot do that. It's kind of like a can you please do that kind of thing. It's a request, but it's not a requirement.
Now, Chief, also from your perspective, if that house was on fire, would that obstruction get in your way potentially?
We have a lot of things that get in our way, especially vehicles. So
if there was a vehicle there,
we work around.
Nothing gets in the way with the new fire truck.
That's right.
It goes above.
Okay.
Yeah. There would be no concern as far as access.
And it's always kind of a case-by-case basis as well. With this one, this is interesting. I mean, it's interesting because this is a larger lot than usual, so the side yard setbacks are pretty large, so that a fire truck, if they needed to get around that, they could. I think they even have some room on the left side of the screen to get through there, too. So this is kind of a interesting one. But this is just something that, because we already permit carports with building permits, so this is something that could potentially happen as well. It's just another example. So there have been instances where they don't completely stick out. With this one is permitted, the on the right, but you know, I've seen people paint the carports to match the trim of their house, so it doesn't stick out too much, and as long as it's out of the setbacks and everything. So so this is another example of a really big one. I think you can fit 3 cars under that one right there. So it is in the side yard and the front yard setback.
We can use that for a substation for the fire department.
Right. So like things like this, Ellen, they have been notified?
The owner has been
notified and said, hey, this is not...
Yeah, we are starting that process, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not cheap, so that's what I'm saying.
Exactly, yeah.
That's going to be an issue, I guess, with people's... That's
part of it. You know, when we're starting this process, and of course I understand, you know, using the PVC pipe with the tarp over it, that's a cheap and easy fix to shade your car, but it's the aesthetics part of it does not work, and you don't have as much as or better guarantee as something like this that's engineered, that, you know, you don't know if that is going to blow over in a random windstorm that we get once every 100 years or whatever. So there's a lot of cons with those types of structures.
Next Monday, that thing's going to fall apart.
So let's see what
the
else
chief
I
got
provided.
It.
We'll only be 72%.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So this is an example of something that would definitely not be allowed because of the side on that one. Because if you're backing out of your car, you can't see that side. So it creates line of sight issues. And then I think this carport is painted red. It's not painted the same reddish color that the house is painted. There's things like that. But yeah, if it kind of matched the pitch of the roof or something, there's ways to kind of mask them, but we haven't been seeing that. So those were the pictures that I had. There were a couple in your packets that I'm welcome to talk about, and I can pull them up too if you'd like. But ultimately, the discussion that we wanted to have today is, because it's hot outside and people's garages are full of things, or there's multiple cars, so they can't use the garage for its actual purpose, which is to shade your car. So that's why these carports are popping up, and should they be allowed in the setback is the main question. So yeah, is there anyone want to volunteer an answer to that question?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Yeah.
And I have to agree with Commissioner Perez and Donna. Just it doesn't look good.
Right.
I mean,
mm-hmm. Now the it's one
unkept. In small terms.
Right.
I was just saying it's just unkept. There is no benefit for it except to protect your car and maybe to shade the front of your house if that's closer to your front door area, if that's what you're wanting. Whatever the case is, yeah, it just doesn't look good. If I lived next door, I'd just be having a fit.
Yeah, and we as a city do a lot of things to ensure that our neighbors aren't encroaching in on our living standards. For example, the big trucks in front where they're not allowed to park there anymore. So we're doing a lot of things. So I think, and I keep saying this, but I thought we had agreed on this about 4 years ago, but I guess I was wrong. But anyhow, looking at Exhibit G, now see, that was part of the design, and that looks awesome.
Correct.
There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that one.
Mm-hmm.
It's aesthetically, and in, not only that, it looks like they have cupboards over here
where they can
put their stuff in there.
Yeah, some storage there.
And mm-hmm. It was just well designed, and it looks good, mm-hmm. aesthetically pleasing.
Right.
And that's what we want our neighbors to do. Mm-hmm. If we do it, they should do it. But yeah, I'm against them 100%.
Okay. So in that case, so this slide was for some ideas of things that people can do to make them more architecturally compatible. But the standards were, if there was, if we wanted to consider having them in the setback, we could try to do things like this, but it would be very difficult to do so. It's trying to convince people to spend more money essentially to do something like this, that while it looks nice, it just may not work out for the property owner. In addition, this is great because it is set back, but almost looks like half of a house. So if you move it forward into the setback, there's still a line of sight issue with this, even if it is nice. So if we were to go down that road, but it sounds like we're not going to, it would just create a lot more difficulty for staff to try to implement things like this to make sure that if it is in the setback, it's still going to work. So, if we were going to go down that road, brainstorming about some ideas, but it sounds like there's some unanimous denial of things in the setback.
So how are we going to approach some of these to enforce the regulation? That's going to be a tough one. Good for you guys.
Right. We do have code enforcement in place.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, that is absolutely their job. And, of course, it's the communication with the code enforcement officer and planning and community development staff. Where they're seeing more of these type of items popping up. Of course, they communicate back to us. We're starting to see more of this. Here's, obviously everybody knows what the zoning code says, we know what the standards say. How hard line of an approach do you want to take on it? And so that's the reason why we wanted to bring it to the Planning Commission today, was to make sure that as it is being approached in the community, and especially as the planning commissioners and maybe your neighbors or city council members are hearing about these things being enforced, that everybody understands why, and that it's being done for the overall protection of the health and safety and quality of life in the community. So it's a code enforcement item, and we work hand in hand with them to address those, and they will reach out to the property owners when they see these type of violations here and let them know what they, what codes they are in violation of, and work with them to either come up with something that's going to allow a structure that is appropriate in its scale and in its setback, to sit back properly, or work with them to actually remove the structure itself.
I wish John was here, because I think if he ran an article explaining some of the pros and cons and whys and the blight issues, it would help soften that path for the enforcement officers, because it's gonna be tough, and you're going to get some pushback, I guarantee you. And so we're going to have some people up here, but you know what? If we're interested in the quality of life, and we need to move forward with this, and we got to stop any future stuff from happening. So
I think maybe we need to brainstorm as far as those individuals that have had these structures up for 3 years and nothing's been said yet. You know, that kind of puts us in code enforcement in a funny spot to say,
sure,
I apologize, we didn't let you know right away that was in this section, couldn't be that, and we needed to work with you and do something. I apologize. You know, it puts us on the defensive right there at the very beginning. So I think we needed to make some decisions about that.
Do we have anything in place where they would have required a permit before they put stuff up like that?
Yeah, that has always been a requirement.
So,
yeah.
I think that's an edge, okay. edge for us that we can use.
And those structures, those carport aftermarket structures, those if someone came in and said, I want a permit, that would be allowed?
For the what,
For the aftermarket carports, the big structure ones.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, the prefabricated structures themselves are allowed. The issue ends up being...
Is where?
These,
yeah,
right,
exactly.
Here, is this what
yeah,
you're talking
that's
about?
What I'm talking
yep.
about.
So those are allowed if they're within the setback regulations?
Yes.
If they follow
yes.
the setback?
If they got a permit.
Yeah, with a building permit.
With
yeah.
a building permit.
Yeah, so essentially everything that you've seen today except for that, you can put on your property in the setback.
Setback.
Yeah. Or, I'm sorry, out of the setback. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, that's still unsightly.
Yeah, it is.
So is there already steps being put into place of, like, the people that are being approached, like, if you don't take it down within a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is there steps already that mm-hmm. the city's taking
Would
and
you mind taking
enforcement
this?
And then, like, if is there a fine, is, after 3 or 4, I mean, what is the structure there for the individuals? Just because, like, we all agree there is going to be blowback, and there's going to be like, hey, I paid so much money to cover, this is my house, mm-hmm. You're going to tell me that you're going to have to take this down, are you going to pay for it, or so is it going to be something that they see, oh, it's $100, that cost me $1,000, $100, I'll keep paying $100, because that cost me $1,000, whatever. So is there anything that's been worked on or in place or
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Jerry Isaac, Fire Chief. Our fire department administers code enforcement program for the city of Reedley. And we are actively pursuing the illegal use of tarps in our city, like you see projected in front of you. And we get pushback. We're getting pushback from just about everybody that has these tarps.
Wow.
However, it's in the code.
Right.
So there is a process. They get a notice, a courtesy notice. They have a certain amount of time, 14 days, to remove the structure. A follow-up inspection takes place, and if nothing has happened, they get a second notice. We try to be nice and educate the folks
right.
about, the issues and the codes that are in front of them. If they fail upon the third inspection, to have taken any action, then a final notice goes out, and then a citation is issued. So they have a long
process
time period, you know, over a month to actually take care of the issue and get
it
mitigated.
So on these notices, is there a financial obligation from the property owner or the individual renting, whatever the case is? Because in my experience with people that are doing something that their neighbors may be embarrassed about or the city may need to address, if there's not a financial thing to it and it's just warnings, I'm going to wait till it gets to the financial status.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, we want to educate the folks. We don't want to just simply go out and punish them the first time around, you know, because that's not good PR on behalf of the city. So we go through a process, and the same process would apply to the metal carports. If you so desire to not allow those, you know, that will obviously go in before council for their approval, and then it will become an ordinance after that. And so that same process I just described to you for the tarps will be the same process that is used for the carports, unless you want some other type of grace period to allow these larger structures to be removed. I imagine some of these folks have several thousand dollars invested in these metal structures, and maybe more.
Chief, I have two questions. One, in places like this, are we getting any complaints from the neighbors?
We do from time to time. It depends on how the structure is maintained. A lot of structures in town you'll see without a tarp on it, and there's just
a frame.
The frame. A lot of tarps are just simply weathered and tattered, and or you know, not attached. They're fallen through the framework, and we get a lot of reports on those as well. So,
are we giving examples, or are we training our two enforcement officers with a script, or how to approach these people, so that they have an idea of, you know, I know in many cases when we're doing stuff like this, we actually suggest a script or of how to approach it. It's like a sales team does that a lot.
Well, we try to do face-to-face whenever we can. A lot of times the notices go out and it cites the actual code section that we're referring to, and there's always the opportunity to call us and talk to us about it. This particular individual has been very vocal about his situation and has called and talked to me several times about his structure, which is going to be removed. So it's just a matter of good communication with the folks and educating them on our codes and why they're in the books the way they are.
Chief, back to the code and the financial side.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an increase in fine for second, third, fourth violations, or is it
if the
flat fee?
The individual is issued a citation and they have 15 days to mitigate the issue, we can go out every day after that and issue a citation, and it does incrementally increase from 50 to 100 to 200, 500, and then to 1,000.
Great.
So
great. Thank you. I was just thinking to avoid that issue that
right.
It brought up in terms of I'll pay $300 or $400, you know, and
true. No,
and
it would
get
be
code
an
enforcement
ongoing
off my back because I've got $1,200 invested in the structure. It's financially, it doesn't make sense. So
and those
an
increments are only based on the administrative citations that the city issues.
Right.
We can also issue a criminal citation as well and make them appear before a judge.
Thank
so
you.
If they don't want to cooperate very well.
Chief, your court code enforcement, do any of them speak Spanish?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, both of them do.
Okay.
The part-timer and the full-timer.
Okay. And not that it's a mandatory
right
thing, but I know that our community is the
right
majority.
Just so you know, we did make a change recently in our full-time code enforcement officer. Officer Downs has left the Reedley area and has been relocated. And so in her place now we have Gavino Barrera. He is our new full-time code enforcement officer. A lot of experience in both the cities of Avenal and Hanford. He uses the same programs in Reedley that he used in Hanford. So he was able to come in and
help.
Very smooth transition.
Okay.
With him. So we give him the keys and away he went.
All right.
So
that's good. Thank you.
So are any of these recommendations going to go to the city council? Is that what we're talking about?
That's the reason why we wanted to have the workshop with the Planning Commission. Just to clarify between what Ellen and Chief Isaac had said, right now there are specific items that call out tarps and whatnot, which is the reason why code enforcement has been able to actually address those specifically. We do not have anything that talks specifically about the metal carports. It doesn't go into that level of detail. So up to this point, addressing any of that from the code enforcement standpoint would be just having an item, a constructed item within that setback. Right, so it would end up being something that's, unless you're a developer, you probably don't pay a whole lot of attention to, right? Or you've had something to do with land use stuff before. Setback, your comment to that as a regular property owner is going to be a what back? You don't have any idea right. What that even is, right? So if we then have language that goes more specific toward the carports themselves, then we can start that education process. Everything, of course, recommended by the Planning Commission would go forth to the City Council, and then once it became code from that point, then you go into the further educating for the community and then enforcing the any of the continual issues that you may have beyond that.
Well, when it gets to that point, I would make a motion, a recommendation, that we don't have these metal
right.
Buildings. Look at that. That, I mean, as nice as that is, it's
right.
It's ugly.
Thank you, Pete.
Well, I think it also goes. Some of these go by safety. I mean, that's a safety concern for me. You know, some people could be hiding. I mean, it just the whole aspect of being so close to the curb. I mean, I just besides unsightly, I just think that it could be a safety thing. We don't know if they constructed it right. They assembled it right. I mean, I know it's
anchored properly.
Yeah, it's in the way. It's right in the middle of the walkway. I mean, I get it. You know, I have family members that have those in the country, and they
Hallelujah,
work.
You're in the country.
Yeah, yeah, in the country. You know, they have plenty of land out there.
Sure.
And I get it, but in the city, I don't think there's a place for those.
No, and the opportunity for them to have junk all over the place. In this particular right. case, these yes. folks. Devote that just specifically for right. car parking, but it could go beyond that. Mm. It gives an opportunity for trash and all that that's unsightly. And look at that. As can you imagine coming up here and you're living right there?
Right there, and you can't
see your house.
Right. So we're not taking any action today. Today is just for information purposes that this is happening in the future. Okay. That the tarp situation is being addressed because it's already there, mm-hmm. and now we want to address these metal structures, and the city is working on something that we at some point will be presented to us mm-hmm. to make a decision on, and then mm-hmm. it'll go forward to the City Council for ordinance approval. Is that how it would go?
Correct. Yeah. So if there are changes to be made to the code that would include metal carports, we can look at examples. This was something that fire chief had found from Hanford. It says no front or side yard space surrounding any structure in the residential zone district shall be covered by tents, tarps, cloth, fabric, wood, or metal covering or structure. So we can expand it to besides just tarps. We can add language like that to and broaden it a little bit. We can even actually add a section that specifically says you cannot put anything. You cannot build anything in the setback, because right now that is kind of dispersed throughout our zoning code. You know, as Rob said, it's kind of only if a developer would be able to figure out where that is in the code.
Yeah,
so we can make it.
People don't know what that is.
Right. Yeah. So we can make it a little bit easier for people to read the code. We're still going to have enforcement issues because of that, but in some cases, because we actually do get phone calls of people that ask permission first if they can put a carport up, and then we do let them know the current code says that you cannot.
Chief, one other question real quick. Code enforcement, are they just responding to the tarp complaints, or are they proactively out there looking for these violations? Or
code enforcement is proactively looking for the nuisances due to the code amendment mm-hmm. that was made earlier this year.
Okay, great.
Yep. At the direction of council.
Great, thank you.
If I could just make one more comment quickly. Part of the packet that you have in front of you does include this site plan right here.
that Caitlin had made for us. So if people, this is actually sent with the letter from code enforcement.
Okay, good. Okay.
In English and Spanish.
Okay, good, because that, yeah, that is what helped me educate myself about setbacks. Right. So this is very, very important.
Right,
so that's good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so we do provide these. And just to point out that we've seen these huge carports. So if you think about it, if you can't put that in the front setback, there aren't a lot of other places where you can place something this large. So if you look at other carports, you're more likely to see something like this based on the restrictions that setbacks provide for you. So, you know, these are the larger ones are definitely illegal because they're not taking into account setbacks. But if you take into account setbacks, you probably wouldn't be able to put something like that even in your backyard anyway. So just pointing that out, it depends on the size of the property, that sort of thing. So if we just want to keep it to say tarps, then, you know, those metal carports will kind of already, you know, if you follow the rules, you may not be able to put something that large up anyway, but you can still put up something smaller, or if you want to outlaw the metal carports at all, that's something that we can look into. But just wanted to add that final comment.
But with Planning Commission's directions now and your feedback, staff will start working on various options and ways that we can address this for additional feedback and formal direction from the Planning Commission, which will then ultimately move forward to the City Council for their consideration.
Okay. Well, I mean, do you guys have issues with things like that? I mean, that's metal, so...
I do, yeah. Only that it goes over into the next thing. Well, if he can have it, why can't I?
Right.
I think we have to make a blanket statement to people so there is no misunderstanding, so there is none of what we have now. Because besides the carport thing, as a business owner, we have vinyls that look like trash. This falls into the same category to me. If it doesn't look good, it isn't a good representation of we are good people focused on our future, looking at our children for success. If it doesn't say those things, get rid of it. Don't allow it to go. Because that's what I think of the vinyls as well, that are faded and you can't read them anyway. So that it to me, it goes hand in hand. Why have it?
So right now it's just the tarps. It doesn't address anything about the wood ones, like the one with the yellow or the, you know, that.
Correct. Yeah, it does not address that right now.
But that one statement from Hanford does.
It
right,
does.
That's
so
an example.
I like that statement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The way they addressed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is an example of what could happen. Sorry. As an amendment,
mm-hmm.
or as an updated version for us, for the city.
Mm-hmm.
I would be in favor of something like that. I think that's well said.
Mm-hmm.
I think it covers everything and doesn't leave enough wiggle room to cause a problem later.
And one of the things that I would do is whoever is responsible is call on Hanford and see how they, if they grandfathered anything in, or
right.
How they approached it, and
sure.
And so on, so we could have a clear path to passing something like this without too much pushback. Because you're going to get pushback,
right.
No matter
right.
what.
No matter what.
Right.
Yeah, and we know that. Mm-hmm. Just how to do it with a soft money.
Right. Now, and that's something that I would be in favor. I would like to know or have a little bit more research on something, for example, an older home that does not have a garage at all or a port. And, you know, say I do want to put something up, that would restrict me from putting that up because I don't have a garage or anything like that. I wouldn't want that to be restricted for someone that to cover a car that might be part of the house, or they can make it look like the house or anything like that. You know, having a garage, the purpose of a garage is to store your car. You know, so if someone has a garage and they want a carport, that's maybe pushing it, and maybe that's where, you know, we can kind of
mm-hmm.
look into that.
if I inherited a house and it didn't have a garage or anything like that, and I would want to hopefully be able to have the opportunity, because I don't have anything anywhere to store my car to put something that would be, you know, nicely, you know, designed, but also that it won't be unsightly, and but it will be functional. So that's what I would like. If staff could do that, do a little bit more research on that. But that's a good direction. That's a good start, a good foundation to see what we can come up with.
Well, if you make a statement like this, you have no alternative. In your particular case, if you were addressing, you'd have to build a garage.
Well, are you going to give me the money for the garage?
Maybe outside of the parameters of your budget. Yeah.
Right.
You know what? Then
right.
You shouldn't buy the house then.
Well, no, I mean.
It was left to him. Remember, right. It was inherited.
Yeah. It was inherited. See, my situation is a little different, you know. If I bought a house and knowingly that I didn't have a garage, then, yeah, I would have to say, hey, you know what? You have to build a garage. Or if it burned down, and I don't, you know, just there's a lot of variation that I would like, you know, for the city just to look into and see, you know, that's a great idea to call city of Hanford to say, hey, you know, the grandfather thing is really important. You know, are we going to allow that? Is that going to be something that, you know, because we're going to be graceful and we're going to be, you know, we're community oriented. We don't want to be a burden to someone, for spending all that money. Are we going to allow that? Are we not? Those are the things that I would like to, you know, have the city address and kind of research on that.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
That looks. I mean, for the majority of the homes, that should be part of our ordinance. So.
Okay. And so in this example, I just want to be clear that this is saying that you cannot have any of those types of materials in the setback. So, and you may have covered this, and I apologize, but the way that is read, you can still put in a metal carport outside of the setbacks. So are you interested in not having any metal carports at all?
Exactly.
On any part of the house or lot?
That's what would be my recommendation. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
You may not.
Okay, so staff will begin looking into
right.
Other examples or opportunities, but it's. I think we've been given good direction that the Planning Commission would like for us to take a very conservative approach to it, and looking to have language that would eliminate carport structures not associated with the, I guess you could say, the actual building of the home.
Right.
Might be the right term to at least start that with.
Right.
Okay. Okay. That at least gives us direction. We know where to start.
So we'll be able to see this next week.
Tomorrow. Yeah, we'll have all these items done for you guys tonight.
Look out 2018.
I mean, awesome. Ellen and Caitlin are good. That might be a little fast.
I'll bring them a six pack of 45. They'll be ready in the morning.
It's 8:05.
45.
No, Red Bulls. Red Bulls.
No, we'll in the next couple several meetings we should be able to have some good content together. I can the timing I don't it would have to be decided, of course, but as part of the next item for the update, we have some things to share with you there, and I think you guys will see the reasons why it might not be just the next meeting where we'll be able to pump this one out, because there's actually other good things that we need to talk about.
Yeah, that's fine. And the only reason why I said all those things is because I know some of the older homes on Reed, I have a good friend that lives, they have a carport that is part of the house that mm-hmm. looks kind of like it was put afterwards, but it mm-hmm. looks part of the house, and it's really nice. So mm-hmm. those are the things that I'm like, because they don't have a garage. So it's like,
right. mm-hmm.
you know, that's why I brought it up. So
are you talking about Wood's house?
No.
Because he actually, anybody know Mr. Wood? Well, he did a good job with his.
Right.
And,
so did my
friend. But under this guideline, he can't do that, right?
No, he could.
He could, because that looks good.
If it's out of the setback.
Right,
yeah.
If it's out of the setback. If it's
under this one here. But we're saying no.
Period.
Period.
No,
but, on the metal ones. Now, mm-hmm. something
yeah.
like that, I can live with.
Right.
Because
it's
it really looks good.
If it's stuccoed, if
it wasn't stuccoed, but it was made like part of the house.
Right.
Kind of attachment. And it looks really nice.
Yeah, and I think the trim matches, if I understand correctly. Or the, yeah, the paint colors. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen language in other communities where those items, of course, out of the setback, which is, you know, nothing allowed within the setback. But outside of the setback, much of the language that they'll use to allow those type of items is it just says that, that the building materials must be consistent with the existing home.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. And I think that's what Ryan did. But the other thing, too, maybe some language as, you know, if that was built exclusively for a car and it's a carport, that's the only thing that they could put there. If they start putting garbage cans in there, and I think there should be some kind of language for that to control that, because now we're right back to where we started. Because that, you can see that from the road, from the main road, from any road.
They're going to put their gym out there.
I mean, we're trying. I know what we're trying to do a lot of pasting here on this picture, but let's do it right.
Right. Yeah. Let's. I think Ellen and Rob are gonna, you know, look into it and see what they can come up so we can look at it. And
yeah, absolutely. Give you guys some things to consider and some language
and pictures,
that you can.
Please.
Yeah,
I'm a visual individual, so pictures is yes, no, yes, no.
Yeah, we'll also look at examples of other city codes and see what types of things they have and if those are effective and or not effective. We can take a look at that.
Make sure you check Parlier, okay?
Okay. I can tell you they likely don't have anything.
I was going to say, was that the joke?
Okay. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that concludes. All right. Thank you, Ellen, for agenda item number 3, the workshop. That concludes that portion. Now we're on. Thank you, Chief, for answering questions and being here. Now we go to the exciting part, the director's report, agenda item number 4. So please give us some development updates.
All right. Absolutely. Thank you very much, Chairman. Well, first and foremost, I would like to talk about the CUP appeal that we heard on July 24th for the appeal of the administrative approval. There's a bunch of the very interesting language. I've noticed that in a lot of the reports and in people talking about it, there's they don't understand exactly how all the items went together. That's because it's bureaucratic, unfortunately. So just to hit on the exact points of what we were looking at again, of course, when it came to the Planning Commission, it was because the administrative review for that applicant was being revoked due to continued complaints and concerns that they that kept coming in for the business location, matched with the fact that the applicant was never communicating back with the city to try to address any of those items. So after the multiple warnings, of course, then they were notified that the administrative approval was going to be revoked. Because at that point, they then reached out to the city. Their feedback was taken by me as an official appeal, which means that now would go to the Planning Commission as a conditional use permit. And that's the item that you guys had heard there. But because there had still not been any substantial effort by the applicant to actually address the issue in any way, the recommendation coming from staff was to deny the conditional use permit because there wasn't items that the applicant was looking to do to actually address the issues. So the Planning Commission, in line with staff's recommendation, of course, did vote to deny that appeal and thereby uphold the revoking action of the administrative approval. In the weeks following that meeting, the applicant then did make effort to finally come down and sit down with staff and say, okay, what exactly are the problems and what are the options and the opportunities that I might have to be able to address it, which is really what we wanted from the applicant right from the beginning. We always want to be very business friendly. We want to work with people if there is a problem and be able to find a resolution to that problem. So first, I would like to thank the Planning Commission for for having the strength and the integrity to really look at the issue and to take the action that they felt was appropriate for the protection of the community at that time. It's extremely important. My very first meeting here, I had talked about how important a planning commission the planning commissioner role is and how grateful I was for you guys being in this position. Actions like this are exactly the reason why I feel that way. That's never an easy action to take, something like that. So thank you very much for that. And then second, I would like to point out the fact that the Planning Commission took that so seriously and really considered the actual item and the concerns that were going on there is the reason why the applicant then realized the magnitude of the issue that was there and says that he is now willing to take on some additional conditions to mitigate the issues that were happening there. As a result of that, staff's recommendation for his appeal that is now going to City Council is going to be to approve his conditional use permit. And there's some funny wording that you guys might read that goes along with that. So what it will be called is it's approving that conditional use permit, but then the subtitle of it is upholding the applicant's appeal. So if you see some of that interesting type of wording, it's just the bureaucracy that goes behind it. But what it comes down to is the fact that the recommendation from staff will now be to approve their conditional use permit only because there were some additional conditions that address the very specific issues that were happening at that business location that the applicant has agreed to be right there in that conditional use permit now. So with the addition of those items, staff then felt, okay, now that these items are going to seek to be mitigated, we were comfortable with supporting the conditional use permit. So that's actually going to be seen by City Council this coming Tuesday at their regular meeting. And if you guys take a look at that agenda, if you have any questions or concerns or anything that you see there, it mirrors much of the Planning Commission agenda, of course, because the activity that happened since is, you know, just maybe the last couple paragraphs of the staff report. Everything before that was exactly what came to the Planning Commission because it is what it is. But wanted to let you guys know that is after months and months, well, years actually at this point of concerns that weren't being addressed in what everybody felt was the appropriate way, it's now headed toward a resolution that I think is going to be the better thing for not only the community but for the applicant as well. So I'm glad that we're headed in that direction. But if you have any additional questions or concerns that you want to talk about offline or anything, by all means, I'm always available. So Please reach out to me and let me know. You guys have any questions about that before we move on?
Yes. When you say staff, was the city manager involved in the initial recommendation that you folks recommended?
The city manager was, of course, aware and knew everything that we were doing as we were moving forward. But she was not personally involved with the item stepping forward, and that was intentional. The reason why she elected to remain in that role was in case it did go appeal to the City Council, she wanted to be sure that she was appropriately removed enough from that item that if it then got to that point that she could be appropriately engaged. Which she did. As soon as the applicant announced that he would appeal to the City Council, then the city manager was personally involved in the discussions moving forward.
And second question is he still being charged $500?
He's not.
Did
in fact,
waive it?
All of his appeal fees were waived. So the initial one coming to the Planning Commission as well as the City Council appeal fee was waived as well.
Because in all honesty, what we wanted was action from him and response and communication. We really didn't want $500.
That's correct. That was intentional as well. That was the city's effort to try to show that we're doing everything we can to work with you as a business owner. And so, I mean, we fully understand how difficult it is to be in business anyways. So we're trying to show the greatest level of leniency that we can while still making sure that we are being the proper protectors of the municipal code and of our community the way that we are employed to do.
Well, thank you, Rob, for doing that. You know, I want to put on the record that, I mean, you know, working with someone like that, you know, the result, I mean, the ultimate result was to work together. And he had great ideas on that day that he was here. Unfortunately, those ideas could have been presented to you guys earlier. But it made him realize where he was at. And I'm hoping that, you know, those ideas were, you know, brought to you. And obviously, it was a positive outlook with him. You know, coming up with a resolution with you guys to move forward with that. It's always very sensitive to take someone's livelihood, but also someone that should have paid attention from the beginning and made an effort to, you know, take care of business, basically. Mm-hmm. So I commend the city. I commend you guys too for just having the patience to do that, and then having the you know having the the opportunity to say, okay, well, we're going to work with you, even though we went through these processes. So I'm going to say this was a win-win. If it hasn't been approved yet, but at least it shows to him that we were not just, you know, trying to, you know, be mean or whatever. We actually are trying to work with him. And he has been in business here for a while, so.
Yep. It certainly feels like it's trending in the direction to be a win-win, and we hope that that's where it ultimately where it ultimately will lie. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Any additional questions about that one? Okay. Another item that you'll see coming up on the City Council agenda is an update or an amendment to the Memorandum of Understanding that we have with Fresno County. So the current MOU that we share with them covers everything from annexation activities to tax sharing agreements, items that did fall under the former redevelopment agency. Several years back in October of 2006 was the last time that they went through an update of this memorandum. At that time, the city was just starting to discuss the general plan update, and so the city and the county both anticipated there would be some type of adjustments needed in that MOU. But as you know, it really wasn't until the CID case was settled following the general plan update that it got to the point where everybody felt like, okay, now we had an adopted general plan, but it was still under fire. Now it's actually to the point where we have an adopted general plan, a certified EIR that goes along with it, and no legal challenges against it. So we felt that it was the appropriate time now to approach Fresno County and to discuss an MOU update that is going to take into account our new general plan, some of the policies within it that take a more of a conservative stance and rein in more local control over activities specific to annexation. So one of the concerns, of course, that any county is ever going to have is when you have cities that are just like growing so quickly that they're not really trying to maintain good borders for themselves, especially when you have a lot of the leapfrog development. It's not good orderly growth. Traditionally, Reedley hasn't been like that just because the community didn't operate that way. But now there's actual general plan policies that show, hey, not only have we not operated that way in the past, but these policies actually indicate exactly how we traditionally have done that, but now right in black and white in writing, it states that's exactly how we do it. So items such as we won't go after an annexation unless we're at 80% of our capacity within the existing city limits, those type of items. So when we interfaced with Fresno County to show them what these items were, they had much more of a comfort level with allowing Reedley to have more local control over when we do approach them for an annexation. They didn't feel like they needed to police that to as greatly as they may have had to in the past or to the level that they have to with some other communities. So they used to have something that said that you could only annex, whatever you were annexing, 50% of that had to be committed to development. And that was the way that they would try to rein in a lot of those items. So we went to them, and our recommendation is 25% of the total area that you're looking for is being committed to development or labeled for development at that time. They were very comfortable with that, taking our policies into account. There's also some language that had to do with the redevelopment agency, which, of course, due to changes in state law, all redevelopment agencies went away several years ago. So the language that talked about the Reedley Redevelopment Agency has been removed from the MOU as well. The annexation change, and then just some small wording changes just as items have adjusted between 2006 and now to bring it back up to current. The good news about that is that with the CID settlement and then a new MOU that deals with these annexation activities, as we are dealing with growth happening in the city, we're going to have a lot more local control over when we feel it's appropriate for us to look for these annexation type of activities. So we know that we have in the near future at least two annexations that will be coming up. One, of course, for Kings Canyon Unified to accommodate the new elementary school in the south portion of town, and one to accommodate a proposed development in the north portion of town near Frankwood and South. So you guys will be hearing about those in the very near future and seeing maps and site plans associated with those items. So over the next, I would say, 6 months to a year, we'll be seeing some good items going forward. And it won't be, you know, just meetings where we're talking about carports all the time. So that'll be a good thing.
Where is that elementary school going?
It is on
East Avenue?
And...
I'd say
Shoemake?
Yeah, Easton Shoemake.
Yeah. But in between the rail trail and East Avenue.
Sounds of the Reedley family apartments.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So or the last So the last development on Frankwood, in between Frankwood and is it High Street?
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Right. Towards the south.
Yep, isn't so that heard about the high school? School? I haven't heard about
The high school is further down.
Further down, but it's going to be a similar
yep,
area.
On the same street,
the same
just
street.
Several blocks down.
So oh, the elementary okay. and then the high school.
But the elementary school they're looking to build first. They actually have their environmental impact report was already out and reviewed for that. The city, of course, looked at that. We've, as we have for years and years, have been worked very closely with Kings Canyon Unified. So, you know, it was part of the general plan update process, 2008 through 2014. And we were anticipating all of these type of items with them, so there's no surprise for us.
They now. Have good vision for stuff like that. Just like one of the things that I just found out in reading one of the reports, the high school itself already is like 250 over capacity
mm-hmm.
right now. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the capacity was closer to 2,200, but it's not.
Yep.
It's been pushed to that because they have no option.
Yeah. But they have 1,750 kids, I guess, now enrolled.
And a capacity of 1,500,
With a capacity of 1,500,
yep.
exactly.
Yep.
And look what we thought when that Orange Cove High School came. It was going to do so much relieving, but we've built enough and not put another high school in to where it really didn't relieve what we thought it would do.
Yep.
What it relieved us out is not having a substantial football team that we can follow.
Well, when you add a second high school there, then we'll get to have a really interesting, you know, in-city rivalry.
It's going to weaken the force now.
You'll at least get to have one game where it's in-city, though, and it'll be it'll be a lot of fun.
We need to do that now. And now we're playing Orange Cove now, I guess. I guess it's going to be on the agenda, right?
I don't know.
I think they had it last year, so hopefully they'll do that. I'm waiting for Emmanuel to join us.
That'd be interesting.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm a big sports fan, so I'd be there.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah, I love Emmanuel. They have some great
teams.
Great. They also have a great vision.
And then in addition to that, we will be having it's called the ATP or the Active Transportation Plan. It's required now by state law that you have this. It deals with anything that is not motorized vehicle. So pedestrian, bicycle, those type of items. You're required to have a state plan in order to then go to your regional transportation planning agency to seek funds for building these active transportation type of projects. In order to...
Alley.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, I guess you could say, yeah. So they are, we elected to go in on that from a regional scale instead of having to take on a consultant as a smaller community and spending, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 to have them come in and do this. We got with the regional planning agency and decided that the majority of the smaller communities all went in together, and you get economies of scale. You can do a regional plan that still gets right down to the same level that's required by the state for you to be eligible to then go look at these funds, and actually even allows you a little bit more flexibility at the local level. Your toes don't get stepped on as much, in all honesty. So the public workshop for that will be on the 24th, 6 p.m. at the community center. They have done some preliminary work already, taking the existing bike and ped plans that we have. They have them mapped, and we'll have them out for the community to make additional comments if they have any, you know, I'd really like to see sidewalks here, or I have safety issues with pedestrian access here, and that's when the public will be available to make those type of comments. And so we'll get them mapped, get them into the plan, and then the goal, of course, from there is to then start looking at specific projects that you can do to enhance the public access and safety for your community.
You said the 24th of August?
Yes, this month.
This
yep, 8:24, 6 p.m. at the community center.
The coalition of the small towns and stuff like that to address that issue you were talking about, we did that, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
It's the same exact item that was done for the multi-jurisdictional housing element,
okay.
Right? So it's going to be, I believe it's all the same agencies unless a couple of the smaller ones have decided to back out. But that ended up being very successful for all of the agencies, because many times with these type of documents, 90 to 95% of it is boilerplate language, right? And it's applicable to everybody. But then it's that other 5% where you need to get specific. So this allows the economies of scale to come in and save some money for everybody. And the regional agency usually throws some dollars at it to assist, which they did in this instance as well. So it's a good thing for the city. With that, that's all I have to report. I'm happy to answer any questions if you might have about any additional items.
Just real quick, is there an update on the reconstruction on Reed, north of Manning to south? Is there anything? Is there anything going to be done during school time? Or, I mean, I know there was going to supposed to be repaving. That's
right.
It.
Yep. It's. But they're really just going to be replacing what's there. So as far as expansion, I know those conversations went back and forth for years and years. But they're simply going to be replacing what is there right now. They've had crews out there starting to do the surveying work and getting items ready. I want to say that John had made the comment that in the next 90 days they expected some activity to begin. Have you heard?
I have not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I saw that they repainted the line, so I was thinking, okay, they're just patching that up for maybe later on.
Yeah. They try to schedule as much of that as they can, of course, outside of not only school time, but also in the winter months. If you do have any type of moisture coming in or whatnot, it can really complicate what they're trying to do, specifically when it comes to road maintenance and work like that. But I want to say that John had made the comment at our last meeting that he anticipated in the next 90 days that there would be some paving activity going on there. But I'll confirm that and let you guys know.
I know you have the answer to this, and I've been meaning to look it up for a long time, but I'm lazy and I'm not going to. So I'm just going to ask you. The 180, the county, the 180 coming out. Now, they're going to try to save Centerville?
Centerville.
Yep.
Or the ones called Minkler?
Minkler and Centerville.
So they're going to go around, is that correct?
Yep, they're going to be on the north side.
Are both lanes going to be on the opposite side, or are they going to split it?
Well, the design that they have leaves the existing 180 as a two-lane road, right? And then they'll take the reconstructed 180 and it'll swing to the north of Centerville and in between Centerville and Minkler, and then it'll stay out that direction until it comes back down and meets with the existing 180.
Okay, so are they going to try to save? Are they going to save the mm-hmm. the street that goes through Minkler? This?
Yes.
Yeah, they're going to save that.
That's going to be part of the 180.
Well, that is part of the 180.
Right.
When they do the 180
north,
right before Centerville. Instead of having that jog where it currently comes in, it'll just continue straight. And then it will go on the north side of Centerville and Minkler and then come back in and meet the 180.
So Centerville and Minkler will not be accessed through the new 180?
You would have, correct. Yeah,
you would get off. Or
you would get off at an adjusted...
kind of like to go into business.
Similar like what they have
to say. It'll become a frontage road. It'll become a frontage road for the
correct.
A friendly, yeah, it'll, a business road. Right.
It'll go off of the highway system and like become more of a local road.
It wouldn't have made any sense to try to save them, not leave something for them there.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, and that was that took several years of discussion for them as well. But when it comes to Caltrans, the majority of the time they're going to look to avoid any type of removal of existing businesses and you don't want to do the eminent domain thing. When you have land available, when you can do an alternative there, and especially when you have property owners that are willing to enter into right-of-way agreements and sales to allow that to happen, I think it's a better thing for your community.
Where is it supposed to come out? From the back, and it connect where the schoolhouse tavern is at, or before that, or after?
Yeah, pretty close.
Pretty close.
Right there in Franklin?
Yep.
Near Franklin, kind of go around.
By the food stand?
Little bit further out.
A little further out.
A little further down the 180.
Because there's a house right there. There's a home right across from the food stand.
Yep.
What's the time frame on that, Rob?
Well, if you've noticed, they've already started, all of their stuff. So they're in
their sign says 2020.
Is that what it says?
Which, in all honesty, usually means 2021 or 2022. Especially when you have a river crossing.
Right. They knocked all those trees down. That looks completely different. I've driven by there. I'm like,
almost every day it looks different.
Right. It's like, I don't recognize this. I don't like,
I go to work by on that road every morning.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to fall off into the cliff. Canyon.
Their initial completion on that was scheduled for 2018, but when the state was going through all of their issues with the state transportation improvement program,
those were the dollars that ended up being that cap on top of the Measure C, the local sales tax dollars that funded the bulk of that project right there. So when those dollars were all going away and the governor was adjusting and moving all these things around, it went away, and that project was going to take even longer to have to make itself whole through Measure C. But then when they passed SB1, and all of a sudden, you know, a big anticipated influx of money came back in, that made the STIP whole again, and immediately the project went back online. I think Measure C has been a good thing for our region. There's a lot of things that you'll see in Fresno County that you don't see in other counties throughout the valley that are not self-help counties.
I agree. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
All right. Future agenda items. Right now, there's none scheduled. So you're going to keep us updated on if there's something that... For sure, we're not going to have anything on the 7th. Is that correct?
Correct, or do we yeah. We don't anticipate anything on the 7th. We may have something on the 21st, but I will confirm that.
Okay.
That's the only thing that I know
of. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and adjourn this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.